Well, my good looking woman said she can't use me no more. Play the harmonica now, boy. All around for some booze. Don't want to get drunk. Woke this morning and I looked all around for some booze. Yeah, and that's when I realized I had these mean old Mercedes booze.
That was a really nice song from Papa John Kolstad and Milton Schindler, Soupy Milton, better known as, from the album Mill City Blues. And we're generous enough to, or rather fortunate enough to be talking tonight with Papa John Kolstad, who had a very definite hand in recording that album many, many years ago. Welcome, Papa John. I'll call you John, okay?
That's fine. All right. I like John.
It's good to have you with us.
It's nice to be here.
And you have since done a more recent album called Beans Taste Fine, which people might be a little more attuned to, which has gotten some airplay, I guess, here on KQ, although your albums have long been in our local file and have been staples of the people who get off on local music here. We might talk a little bit about some of your early stuff. Not only was that particular album one of our staples, but also an album called The Sorry Mothers, Greatest Hits Volume 3, which maybe is a story you want to tell us about. But that featured Bill Hinckley and Judy Larson and Soupy Milton and a few other people.
Bob Stelnicki was the Bob Stelnicki played the bass.
Okay, yeah. And that was an album we can maybe hear a tune from a little bit later. But let's talk a little bit about what you're doing in town right now. First of all, you come to us from the East, right? Well,
I've been in Boston. I've been living in Boston for 5 years. Okay. I was out there studying music and performing. And I
studying at the Berklee School of Music.
Berklee College of Music. College of Music. They like to be called a college out there.
Well, that's
they were
their
just a small school, but they've grown tremendously, and it's really a very good school.
Did you specifically quit performing to go to school?
No, I was performing all the time I was out there. And while I was out there, in fact, I'm pretty well known out on the East Coast now, and especially in the folk circuit. I did a lot of festivals. I did some of the major festivals. Philadelphia, I played at the Smithsonian Folklife Festival. And a lot of the smaller festivals, the real steady ones that are in New Jersey and throughout New England, and a lot of colleges hold festivals out there yearly. And I performed quite regularly at them and became an attraction. And much more of attraction probably than I ever had been in my own area.
You are from this area then, originally?
I was born in St. Paul and grew up in the general vicinity in Wisconsin is where I really grew up. Mm-hmm. When I came to the U's, when I started playing coffee houses and for a while.
Now you're talking about what, mid-60s?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in 1966 about, I started playing at the Triangle Bar. And that's sort of the turning point from being a semi-professional to really being full-time professional. And I'd work six nights a week at the Triangle, and I worked there for 3 years as well as touring. And that's when I first started going. I went to New York, I played there, and Boston, and I went to San Francisco and L.A. and places like that. And although I didn't play very much out there professionally, I did very well when I did go there, and the few jobs that I did have. And I auditioned at a lot of places, not with the idea in mind of getting work, but just to find out how interested they were in what I was doing. And every place I played, you have to get in line. You know, they have an amateur night, and
right.
Boy, were there a lot of them. And which is good. It's a good thing to have. But I had to wait often 3, 4, 5 hours to be able to play. And as soon as you get through playing, all of a sudden they would change the whole treatment of you from get back in line, kid, to would you come here a minute? Could I please talk to you? Do you have any open dates coming up?
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was sort of fun, but after a while I got tired of doing that. But So about 1969 was when I came back from the last trip doing that. I'd been to New York, and I came back in 1969, and that's when the Sorry Mothers, we'd been playing all the time in ski resorts and various places, and then we settled down and played full-time as a band and set up tours and traveled for 2.5 years. We had an old school bus we toured with, and during that time we made the Mill City Blues album with Soupy and I and the Sorry Mothers Greatest Hits Volume 3. And
we've got that album. We're going to listen to a cut from it. Do you want to maybe give us a little bit of an explanation of what this cut is about?
Right.
It's a cut that we've always played here, and some people might not know exactly why it was written. So please explain.
Well, I like to say that I made this song up because as opposed to sitting down and writing it, which I know how to do now, I could sit down and literally write a song with notes and all that. But one time I was in a bar and I heard the rumor, a friend of mine told me that I shouldn't say anything on the telephone that I didn't want the FBI to know. And then he walked away. And so...
Put into perspective, this was about when?
1965, 66, somewhere
okay.
in there. Could have been 64. My memory for exact dates is a little vague. But it was right in that period. It was before marijuana was really the accepted thing. You know, now it's marijuana is nothing. But in those days, it was compared with heroin. And it was a very vicious and frightening thing to be accused of having.
Killer weed. Yes.
Right. Being in possession of marijuana was a serious accusation to make for anybody. So I went to this fella and I said, now come on, tell me what do you mean? Do you mean that the FBI is listening to my phone? And that meant, I thought that meant that they were picking me out. And he said, no, they're tapping the whole West Bank area and they want to get some convictions for marijuana. Mm-hmm. Selling because apparently they had a quota and it's much easier to deal with marijuana dealers because they were mostly students and people without any kind of political power, no money. It was very easy.
Jazz
victim.
Musicians.
Right, they're very easy victims. Where if you start dealing with hard narcotics, you got to deal with organized crime. Uh-huh. And those people are not easy to deal with. They're real scary and you could get hurt dealing with them. So it's easier to deal with the students and the West Bank people. So anyway, I went to him and said, you don't really think that they're listening to me. And he says, well, don't say anything that you don't want the FBI to know. And be careful what you say. Mm-hmm. And I said, do they suspect me? I mean, this guy had pretty good information, apparently. I said, do they suspect me of selling marijuana? And he says, oh, no, they know you're a drunk. And at that time, I used to hang around at the West Bank bars. And at the end of the bar time, when the bars would close at 1, we'd go to a couple of different people's places. And we'd play music all night. And part of that was the people would sell maybe a beer for a quarter to their friends. It was just a matter of helping to support the beer, but the guy actually paid his rent with that money. That's mm-hmm. how often we did this. But the musicians got to drink for free. So I'd go and play all night for free and drink beer, which I loved to do. So I soon got the reputation of being a good a heavy drinker. And so when he said, you know, no, you're a drunk, they're not worried about you. I got this light bulb idea, you know, the old light bulb goes on, that... Well, if that's going to keep me from being suspected by the FBI, well, then I'll just dramatize this whole thing. So I went home and I...
Increase your drunk profile.
That's exactly yeah. right. So I call up this friend of mine who I figured also was being tapped, and I said, I got a great song for you. And I made up this song right there on the spot. I'm going to get drunk and stay drunk all the time.
Let's do it. This is Get Drunk from Sorry Mother's Greatest
Hits,
Volume 3.
I'm going downtown.
What you gonna do?
Tell you what I'm gonna do.
Tell me.
I'm gonna get drunk.
Can I come along?
I'm gonna get drunk. I'm gonna get drunk. Stay drunk all the time. I'm gonna get drunk.
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 I'm gonna get drunk,
stay drunk all the time.
That's Soupy Milton Schindler playing the harmonica on there. I hope he's playing harmonica on there. And the Sorry Mothers are backing me up on that cut.
Some of the Sorry Mothers people are still around town playing. Bill Hinckley and Judy Larson, I know, are around.
Right.
What is Soupy Milton doing these days?
Soupy Milton is working at a music and pipe store. And he's very happy doing it. He's still playing music.
Mm-hmm.
He's teaching some music. He's teaching some harmonica. It's
I
a very
imagine.
Tough business to stay in, the music business.
What's it like being an employed, struggling blues and folk artist?
Well,
you're still struggling. I mean, obviously, you're not a mass appeal sort of artist. You're not writing hit songs.
I'm really doing quite well. I'm not making millions of dollars, but I am making a good living at it, and things are growing very, very rapidly. And I understand I've gotten a letter recently from some people on the West Coast in the music business, or some heavies who have expressed some real strong interest in some things I've done.
I was going to ask if you ever do become frustrated that maybe you're not receiving the acceptance that you want to. I mean, obviously you have followings in places, and I'm sure you're going to do well in any town you go. You have a big following on the East Coast and back here, of course, but there's a problem, I guess, of exposure to a certain type of music that a lot of people, especially younger people, just haven't been exposed to at all. And so you're essentially giving them something that they're not used to, or maybe they think is outdated or maybe not right for them. How do you deal with that? It's got to be frustrating.
It's interesting. One time some young people approached me. I was doing a lot of blues at this particular time they heard me. And they came up to me and they said, "Wow, that's really great. How did you ever come up to invent all of this kind of music?" Now, they thought that I had invented all this because they had never heard it before, mm-hmm. and which is the same of people when these young folks listen to radio and they hear some of their favorite performers. They think that so-and-so, this person who they really adore, really love their music, this is something they created. And they never find out that those songs may have been written 40 years ago, and these people are just using a style of someone who came long before them. That never gets out to them. So I like to tell people about that. I like to say, well, if you like this kind of music, this is part of American musical heritage, and I'm not the inventor of this music. I am standing on the shoulders of many people who've gone before me. I'm standing on the shoulders of people right in this area. Dave Snaker Ray. I've learned a great deal from him. John Kerner, been a tremendous influence on me and many other people. Judy Larson has been a great influence on me, and plus the people on record. Leadbelly, who was gone before I ever started playing music. But he's luckily on record, and many, many more people that nobody out there probably would recognize the names of. But they are there, and the records are available, but they're not easy to find. You have to know where to go and look for them and ask for them. I think that Leon Redbone has demonstrated that acoustic music. Are you familiar with Leon Redbone?
Yes.
In this area?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of national television things. And there's not a great deal of difference in terms of the music that Leon does to the music that I do and a lot of people that I know.
You think, though, maybe one reason for his success to an extent is the novelty of his appearance, and also, I mean, true, he does do very good renditions of that, but mm-hmm. he's almost a novelty, he's almost a quirk, and I'm wondering if maybe that,
yes.
Does that help or hinder the cause of folk and blues music?
I think it helps it.
It's exposure. That's got to be a help.
I think that it's very good for it. I think Leon is a tremendous performer, and he is truly a really fine entertainer. And
yeah.
I think that's the bottom line. Leon, I think, is shown that acoustic music and that blues and that kind of music can sell on a vast market. And it's going to make it easier for me to come into a record company and say, true, I play folk and blues and some swing kind of tunes, but it can sell. Music moves in cycles, and we've been through a really popular time for folk music and so on. I'm doing my music's different than it was. It was just straight blues and some gospel and ragtime-ish kind of things. Now I'm doing a lot of swing, and I feel swing is really becoming a very popular form, and it's something that I'm going into naturally, and so there'll be a new kind of music, in a sense, that I'm going to be doing. And, you never can tell. I might fall into a trend that's happening. And I know that when I've done it in concerts and things out east, it's been very popular. And from the Beans Taste Fine record, the swing tunes are the most popular, I think.
We're going to hear a cut from that album in just a minute. I'd like to mention once again the fact that you're going to be at the Hull Coffee House this weekend. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. Scott Alaric is fronting for you, and you're headlining, and it should be a fun show.
I have a fella coming up from Eau Claire who I met recently who plays swing jazz fiddle, And he sat in with me when I performed in Eau Claire recently, and he is really, really good. He plays a la Stefan Grappelli, Django Reinhardt. If people are familiar with that.
Sounds like it's going to be a really good time.
So we're going to do some swing, and I'll be doing some of the old blues kind of things, and as possible, Soupy Milton Schindler might drop by and play some harmonica if we can talk him into it. And maybe
try real hard. That should be fun.
Maybe a few other Sorry Mothers or some people might just sit in. And so it should be a really good time. I'm very excited about it, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Great. That's Friday and Saturday night of this weekend, and the doors open at 8:30. Music starts at 9 both nights, and that's in the basement of Kauffman Union on the U of M campus at the Whole Coffee House. Papa John Kolstad, thanks a lot for coming down and talking to us. Really appreciate your time, and glad to see you back in the Twin Cities. It's good to have you back. Maybe you can say a little bit about this last and final song we're going to hear from the Beans Taste Fine album.
This is the title cut from the album, and we wanted to do something that was the album. The theme of the album was to have a good time, and it was directed at people being able to hear that record and know exactly what we would sound like in a concert. And most of the stuff is done live. Well, we're looking for a title that would say that this is a fun album, and to tell it was a little zany, and you're supposed to listen to it and have a good time. So we thought Beans Taste Fine would be a kind of a good theme, and there's a big plate of beans on the cover, and the whole thing is sort of a spoof, and it's a little weird, it's a little funny, and the Shel Silverstein song, you know, after you've been eating steak a long time, beans taste fine, and also that's a comment on the sort of politics and whatnot of today. You know, we had things so good in the 60s that we couldn't stand it, so we saw to it that we changed things so that things have really gotten terrible, and we're back to beans, and now we can struggle to get back to having steak again or whatever.
I'm all for it.
I love them beans.
Thanks a lot, John.
Thank you.
You know, he got himself a chauffeur, chef, and a maid, and he was living in the latest of style. You know, I caught this cat eating in this greasy spoon and parked right out front of his big limousine. I said, hey,